Magnesium plays a critical role in vital bodily functions, including energy production, heart health, immunity, and more restful sleep. Magnesium is ubiquitous in metabolic pathways that affect virtually all organ systems. But magnesium deficiency or insufficiency is one of the most pervasive nutritional problems afflicting the majority of Americans. Ultra-processed foods, many common medications, stress, and medical conditions like diabetes all deplete magnesium. So I'm excited to tell you about MagSRT from Jigsaw Health. MagSRT has rightfully earned a reputation as the most popular, most bioavailable, and best-tolerated magnesium brands in the world. The developers of MagSRT have solved a problem that deters many from getting adequate intake of elemental magnesium. Their unique formulation is gentle on the stomach and doesn't produce unwanted GI effects. For more information and to order MagSRT, just go to JigsawHealth.com. That's JigsawHealth.com. Use coupon code HOFFMAN10 for $10 off your order. That's JigsawHealth.com and use code HOFFMAN10 for MagSRT, time-released magnesium. Welcome to today's Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman. The topic is Healthy Gut, Healthy You. That's the name of a book by today's guest. He's Dr. Michael Ruscio. The subtitle of the book is The Personalized Plan to Transform Your Health from the Inside Out. Dr. Ruscio is an expert on gastrointestinal matters, but he kind of extends the influence of the GI tract to all parts of the body. We're going to find out how that works during today's podcast. He is a clinician, a chiropractor, as well as a naturopathic physician. He's also a clinical researcher, published in research journals. He works together with his clinical and research team, and his primary focus areas are digestive health and the impact of digestive health, as I said, on other facets of health, including energy, sleep, mood, thyroid function, that's an intriguing connection, and overall optimization. As I said, his work has been published in peer-reviewed medical journals. He speaks at integrative medical conferences. He is also an adjunct professor at the University of Bridgeport, which is a center of excellence for the teaching of nutrition and functional medicine. His clinic is the Ruscio Institute for Functional Health, which I believe is in Austin, Texas. Is that correct, Dr. Ruscio?
That's correct, although right now we are doing all telehealth kind of post-COVID after we were forced to. It was just so convenient that we've stayed all telehealth ever since.
Right. It's kind of, you know, once you've explored that modality, it's kind of hard to go back.
Right.
So it's an opportunity for you to extend your expertise to people all over the country and all over the world, presumably. Okay, so we're going to, you know, look at this topic from your standpoint as author of Healthy Gut, Healthy You. But I wanted to ask you a little bit about your personal journey, because from what I can see here is that you entered this field as an athlete. You got a Bachelor of Science in Exercise Kinesiology, study of exercise and movement. But then you had kind of an epiphany that led you to study the GI tract and functional medicine.
Yeah, a painful epiphany. Cruising along at 20, 21 years of age, you feel kind of invincible, right? You can stay up late and do whatever you want, and you're generally unfazed, or at least I was. I was certainly a pretty vital and robust youngster. But boy, all of a sudden, I started having debilitating insomnia. And I'm not talking sleeping lightly. I'm talking can't fall asleep until 4 o'clock in the morning, finding myself driving to the local, mini mart to buy a Kit Kat bar because I just have such cravings and I can't sleep. And for some reason, if I eat a bunch of sugar, maybe I'll sleep a little bit. And, the next day I'd be tired. I was having periods of depression. And all during this time, I'm eating all organic. I'm studying health and nutrition. I'm eating slowly. getting time outside, exercising, stress managing, doing all the things that one should do to be healthy. Yet my health just really was falling apart. And this led me to see a few doctors and went to see a GP, endocrinologist, and a family practice doctor. And they all said, yeah, you know, your lipids look good. You know, all the blood work checks out. Thyroid's normal. Testosterone's normal. You're probably just stressed with school and with exams, which I appreciated the intent behind that, but they didn't really hear everything I was saying about all that I was doing for my health. So long story short, found my way to an integrative chiropractor who had me do a stool test and found an amoeba, Amoeba histolytica, quite a pathogenic bug to find. Yeah. And he said to me, this is unfortunate, but you're going to learn a whole lot by going through this process firsthand. And I did. You know, it was a little bit of a road to improve my health. And along the way, I learned about how you can eat a healthy meal, but feel terrible afterwards if your gut health is impaired. And this is a lot of what I'm passionate about now, the people who are trying to be healthy, but they're still spinning their wheels. And hence why I've really focused on this sort of integrative healthcare model centered around gut health.
And so you had been like carrying around this pathogen, this amoeba, but you didn't have some of the characteristic symptoms of dysentery. You know, you weren't like going to the bathroom 14 times a day. You just felt sort of ill at ease, and you had a sort of vague malaise, which tends to be ascribed to, you know, perhaps it's a psychological problem. Maybe you're a little stressed. You know, you're one of those 20-somethings who is experiencing some, you know, identity crisis. Maybe you should talk to a shrink. Right? That's usually the route.
Yeah. I mean, it was one of the most important lessons for me is that someone can have a problem in the gut that's not manifesting symptomatically as gastrointestinal symptoms. And we see this in models of, let's say, celiac, right? There are some celiac presentations that are only neurological or dermatological or rheumatological. So skin, joints, brain. So,
When I studied this in medical school, they basically showed us pictures of people who looked like concentration camp survivors. And they said, this is the hallmark of celiac disease. The patients are completely emaciated. They have severe gastrointestinal problems. But subsequently, I've learned that it can be very subtle. It can be, some autoimmune problem or some vague, malaise, fatigue, brain fog, any number of manifestations that are short of this classic celiac presentation.
Yep, exactly. And so that's really moored me to make sure that I never skip past gut health too quickly with anyone that we work with. And we make sure just to do a thorough job of optimizing the GI first and then sort of reevaluate, because you'd be surprised. And this is sort of what you see in the imagery of the cover of Healthy Gut, Healthy You. The gut connects to mood, energy, sleep, skin, metabolism, and digestion, not an exhaustive list, but just to point out to people, let's say you think you have adrenal fatigue. Okay, maybe you do, right? But there has been evidence, and this was a really nice study by Quigley and other authors, that a successful probiotic intervention could normalize what's known as the cortisol awakening response. So probably the most accurate way to measure cortisol. We can get into sort of the gut brain adrenal.
So that would be like the psychobiotic connection in effect, because the suggestion that if you normalize the gut, perhaps via probiotics, diet change, you can affect the adrenal function, which is certainly associated with the stress response.
Yes. And another paper by Ford and colleagues partially answered this question, right? Because Quigley demonstrated a successful probiotic intervention can normalize cortisol levels. That's great. But they didn't really account for how. A different paper by Ford, they found after doing functional MRI scans, pre and post probiotic intervention, that they balanced the activation of the amygdala, this center in the limbic system that governs the fear response. So if people are stressed, anxious, perhaps they have poor memory, the amygdala as part of this limbic system can be dysfunctional. But the limbic system also contains the thalamus and the hypothalamus, which regulate adrenal function. So it's probably a tie-in in part of how the gut affects the brain and how the brain signals to the adrenals.
Mm-hmm. I have actually an interesting illustration of that. Is I have a colleague who was sick, just felt malaise and GI problems, and it wasn't clear what was going on. And it's so much so that she had to resign from her post and take a leave of absence. Mm. And she disappeared from the scene for a while. And then I met her at a conference, and she looked great, and she was bright and cheerful and radiant. And I said, you know, I pulled her aside, and I said, you got to tell me your secret. And she said, well, you know, I really got desperate, and I tried a lot of things. And finally, I went to a clinic where they administered a fecal transplant.
Right.
And it changed my life. And what she said was, I must have received a fecal transplant from a very happy donor, because it's dramatically affected my mood. And that is so profound. Now, perhaps you don't have to go to the length of getting a fecal transplant. Maybe you can explain to us, you know, what that is and perhaps methods that are short of that extreme.
Sure.
Change your gut.
So that's a great story. And this goes, the FMT, as it's for short, it goes back to traditional Chinese medicine, maybe we could even say ancient Chinese medicine. It was once known as golden dragon soup.
Ooh.
Where when someone was really sick and they couldn't figure out why.
I don't want to go to that restaurant. No.
Yeah, we don't want that dish necessarily. We have better routes of administration nowadays. But even hundreds and hundreds of years ago, they were seeing that if you gave sort of this super probiotic as a healthy donor stool to a sick individual, you could rebalance the community, the microbiome. And now they're doing it with either nasogastric tube or sort of colonic enema administrations, mm-hmm. using a healthy donor stool to someone who is experiencing whatever illness. It's FDA approved for resistant C. diff, Clostridium difficile. I think the next condition that will be approved is probably inflammatory bowel disease.
Yep.
Because the data there and Crohn's pretty compelling. And sure, I mean, that's one option. I would say that's the last thing people should do, just because there are so many amazing tools that can be used. Mm-hmm. But perhaps your colleague didn't have access to all of those. I mean, even me going back 15 years when I had this issue, we knew barely, you know, a tenth of what we know now about how to use various dietary approaches, low FODMAP, low histamine, how to use probiotics, antimicrobials, elemental diets. So we have so many more tools now that I think most people won't need an FMT, but certainly something to think about.
I want to take a deep dive into, you know, some of those tools, you know, some of your favorite herbals, you know, what considerations there are for probiotics, so, you know, the efficacy of various diets. But I'm intrigued by your research, and I think you wrote a paper on this, about the gut-thyroid connection.
Mm.
And I think that's very intriguing.
You know, it was something that we were paying a little bit of attention to going back maybe 7 years, and people would come in and the angle and what people were asking about was, well, I have Hashimoto's, the autoimmune condition that can cause hypothyroidism. And I've heard that your gut is really important for your immune system and for autoimmunity. What can we do from a gut perspective for my thyroid? And so we started seeing more and more of these individuals. And over time, I was noticing that some people were coming in what appeared to be overdosed on thyroid hormone, meaning their TSH would be really low. I'm talking flagged low by LabCorp or Quest. Mm-hmm. Their T4 and T3 would be high. And their provider was kind of falling into that hammer nail syndrome. Yep. If all you have is a hammer, everything is a nail. And we were seeing people need less hormone and have improved symptoms as we were doing the work in the gut. And it got so consistent that we said, let's just draw up a case series that we published in the IMCJ journal, where we had five patients and they were all a little bit different. But the main theme was either you didn't need thyroid hormone to begin with and the symptoms were from your gut, or you weren't consistently absorbing, say, the levothyroxine. And by improving your gut health, now you're consistently absorbing it. You need less of it. You have more stable levels and you have improved symptoms. Mm-hmm. So it's a pretty profound and I think important connection that's fairly overlooked. And that's why we published a paper to have something, you know, it's a case series. So it's not a randomized control trial, but at least it went through the rigor of peer review where we tried to say, hey guys, let's not overlook this. If you're floundering with the dose of Levo, maybe you're adding Cytomel, T3 and you're just not getting anywhere, it could be Mm-hmm. Either their gut-causing malabsorption or their gut-causing the symptoms that you think are from their thyroid.
Well, Hashimoto's is an autoimmune condition, and some people are advocating, and I've used this in my practice, the autoimmune paleo diet. In other words, a diet of elimination, more of like what people ate before the introduction of modern foods, especially with the elimination of gluten. Because right. even in the absence of celiac disease, we know celiac disease is associated with thyroid autoimmunity. That's a given. But some people don't actually have celiac disease. But sometimes it's a good move to pull the grains. Yeah?
Agreed. And there's a little bit of a nuance here. So let me paint a perspective, sort of a spectrum. Mm-hmm. You have the person on the standard American diet. They need to desperately improve their food quality, probably reduce the amount of processed grains that they're eating. Yes. At the other end of the spectrum, maybe the person who's listening to this podcast is pretty fastidious about their health. And this is where overly restricting foods can be a problem. And I try to be really good about acknowledging this cohort.
Yep.
So enter the autoimmune paleo diet. They actually did a study. When I say they, it's a friend and colleague, Dr. Robert Abbott. He published, I think, the most insightful study here to date, wherein they gave people who were baseline gluten-free and had Hashimoto's, that autoimmune condition that can cause hypothyroidism. They then put them on the autoimmune paleo diet, which cuts out nuts, seeds,
even more stringent. It's a very stringent
all grains. Diet. Yeah, even more restrictive. They didn't find any additional improvement in thyroid autoimmunity.
Mm-hmm.
So I do think it's important to think about gluten, do a elimination and then reintroduction. But what I'm seeing is a lot of people just on faith avoiding gluten mm-hmm. in perpetuity. And I think that's a mistake.
No, I think that's a very reasonable point to make, because I think that sometimes people get overzealous around this, and it actually induces sort of a food phobia. And so, you know, we spend so much time trying to convince people that diet matters. And so they finally buy right. into that. But then they sometimes go to the extreme where they, you know, diet is everything, and every morsel of food is, a potential threat. And that becomes
precisely
a problem. Yeah.
Precisely. And this is why in Healthy Gut, Healthy You, I lay out the axiom of be careful not to force a dietary solution to what might not be a dietary problem. And that was me, right? If you have an active infectious or microbial issue in the gut, sure, diet's going to help that to some extent, but it may not be enough in and of itself. And, you know, the gluten piece, it ties to another aspect that I think is really important to introduce, which is FODMAPs. FODMAPs mm-hmm. are, and the acronym stands for fermentable oligosaccharides, disaccharides, monosaccharides, and polyols. It's just a mouthful that describes the structure of carbohydrates in certain fruits and vegetables that really require bacterial assistance to digest. Mm-hmm. Why that matters as it pertains to gluten is gluten contains two components that can be problematic. One is the gliadin, the protein that can cause this inflammatory response in celiac or in non-celiac gluten sensitivity. But what's less appreciated, I think really important, is wheat, rye, and barley, these gluten-containing grains, are also high FODMAP. And mm-hmm. when people go gluten-free, they end up going lower FODMAP. And so they'll see an improvement, but the improvement might be due to the FODMAP reduction. In fact, it was one fascinating paper. It gave people who reported, self-reported gluten intolerance, either a placebo bar, inert, a high FODMAP bar, or a gluten-containing bar. Only the people who had the high FODMAP bar had an elicitation of their symptoms.
Hmm.
And why this all matters is FODMAP tolerance is recoverable.
Yeah.
Meaning someone could reintroduce
your microbiome, and subsequently you can reintroduce these things. And I think there's a misnomer, because a lot of people, I'm on the FODMAP diet. Well, no, it's actually a trial. It's kind of like a trial of elimination, and it is not a lifetime plan unless you're the most, the most refractory irritable bowel syndrome patient ever,
right.
Then you might have to adhere to it with great care. But mostly it's like, try this and then gradually reintroduce. That, right?
No, precisely. And we actually have I believe the author on this was Burdacki. It might have the name there wrong, but a meta-analysis from just this year, 2024, that found over 50% of the foods that were eliminated when going low FODMAP could be successfully reintroduced. So yes, I mean, the data are in that this is reparative. And the way I describe it is sort of like a rehab plan. If you had a low back injury, sure, you probably couldn't run for a month. But as you recover and you repair, yes, totally. The expectation would be you can go back to running, to squatting, whatever it is.
I think that that's a very sane way to look at these types of programs, because sometimes I think people and practitioners, they get sort of caught up in a sort of a downward spiral of elimination that engenders what can be called food phobia. Or
orthorexia.
Orthorexia, yeah. That's the word I'm looking for. You have coined the term. Steve Bratman, one of my colleagues many years ago, coined that term, and it's very appropriate.
Yeah, and we see a lot of that, and I'm sure you probably do too. You know, if you're selecting for a cohort of people that are very well-read and well-educated, this is kind of par for that course, because they'll read about lectins and FODMAPs and gluten and dairy and salicylates, and before you know it, they're eating almost nothing. And sometimes that's the source of the problem.
You do a Venn diagram of all those eliminations, and there's very little left.
It doesn't leave much.
Yeah, it's all those exclusions. Well, that's good stuff. Okay, so you know, you've laid the groundwork for our discussion in part two. I want to talk a little bit about what we can do practically to heal our guts. Book is Healthy Gut, Healthy You, and I guess it's different strokes for different folks, but let's talk about some of the range of possibilities when we look to alter the microbiome, which we know is of key importance in so many areas, determining the risk for autoimmune disease, determining the risk for mood-related issues, general malaise, even having an impact on metabolism insofar as people with refractory weight problems, because changing the gut can actually change the way that calories are stored as fat. So good stuff. Let's pause. And when we return, by the way, give us the heads up on several things. You do a podcast, right?
And I do.
Tell us about your podcast, and then tell us about how people can access it.
Yeah, if you search my name, Michael Ruscio, R-U-S-C-I-O, pretty much anywhere, I should come up fairly easily. We have a website with a blog and also a podcast and a YouTube channel. And it's more of this. You know, it's someone as myself who's had issues with their health personally, who is also a clinician and who's also a researcher. And I try to bring, coming to those sort of Venn diagram perspectives, a balance of all three of those. And I really do think that gives a very rich perspective, because research can tell us a lot, but not everything. And as a clinician, you can be biased if you're not moored by your own personal experience or what the research says. And so we try to just outline what can we do to improve our health without falling into heresy or sort of bandwagon jumping.
Okay, that's a good summation. And then there, of course, there's the book, Healthy Gut, Healthy You, The Personalized Plan to Transform Your Health from the Inside Out, available via the usual sources. And also, you afford people the opportunity to get clinical consults via telemedicine. And what's the portal there? drruscio.com?
Yeah, it's all available through the website, which is drruscio.com. Exactly.
Good stuff. Okay. I think that the podcast will be of value to our listeners, because it's right in their wheelhouse, very consistent with our messaging here on Intelligent Medicine. All right. When we return, more with today's guest, Dr. Michael Ruscio. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is the Intelligent Medicine Podcast.